Cleopatra podcast conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome back to The Deep Dive, where we take your sources, your research, and our own explorations and really try to boil them down into essential knowledge. Today, we're plunging into some profound and, let's be honest, often deliberately uncomfortable truths.
Yeah, definitely bracing.
Our subject is E.M. Cioran's hugely influential yet, well, unsettling work.
Yeah.
The Trouble with Being Born. We've really gone through the detailed summaries and key excerpts you provided, trying to distill Cioran's pretty radical ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission today is to unpack his uncompromising philosophical pessimism. And it's not just, you know, feeling gloomy.
Right. It's a structured belief.
Exactly. A deep belief in life's inherent inescapable suffering. We want to understand his unique argument that existence itself is the fundamental problem. And maybe surprisingly, explore why even such a dark perspective might offer some, well, genuinely profound insights.
And maybe even a strange paradoxical sense of liberation for you, the listener.
Yeah, that paradoxical part is key.
It's definitely a challenging lens to view the world through, no doubt. Cioran isn't your typical academic philosopher.
Not at all.
He stands very much as an outsider. And his work doesn't just offer an alternative viewpoint. It actively challenges some of our deepest assumptions.
The ones we barely even think about.
Exactly. Assumptions about life, happiness, purpose. Right from the get-go, he basically invites us to question the very fabric of our being.
That's a powerful way to put it. So who was this man who dared to question everything? E.M. Cioran, Romanian-born, later French philosopher and essayist, a fascinating figure. And his personal journey wasn't just like background noise. It seems like it was the crucible for his most profound and unsettling ideas.
Absolutely forged in that fight.
He first wrote in Romanian, but then after moving to Paris in, what, 1937?
That's right.
He deliberately adopted French, immersed himself completely. This act of linguistic and cultural exile, it must have given him a unique perspective, always feeling a bit between worlds.
Exactly. And that sense of being an outsider wasn't just cultural. It felt deeply metaphysical for him.
Oh, okay.
And what's particularly striking, I think, is his lifelong battle with chronic insomnia.
Right, you mentioned that.
He often credited those sleepless nights, that forced contemplation in the wee hours, with giving him these unique insights into consciousness and, well, despair.
So he wasn't just suffering from it.
He was observing it, observing the tormented machinery of his own mind, you could say. He also wrestled with depression, but instead of just succumbing, he channeled it.
Into what?
Into voracious reading across philosophy, literature, mysticism. A huge range.
And he didn't try to build those grand, you know, all-encompassing systems, did he?
No, not at all.
He famously worked in fragments, aphorism.
Right.
Almost like little poetic bursts of insight.
Precisely. He saw those big philosophical systems as ultimately futile attempts to impose order on what he felt was an inherently chaotic universe.
A kind of self-deception.
Pretty much, yeah. He preferred the sharp, piercing truth you could maybe capture in a single, perfectly crafted sentence. And unlike many existentialists who, you know, confront the void and then say, okay, let's build new meaning or find a reason to live,
Cioran didn't offer that.
No consolation prize there.
Okay.
He saw himself as a metaphysical exile, a consciousness that felt fundamentally alien, detached from the universe it lived in, like he truly didn't belong.
Wow.
Which raises a really important point. How do you even approach philosophy when your goal isn't to solve problems, but maybe just to expose them without offering a cure?
That brings us right to the core of his most provocative argument, doesn't it? In the title of this book, the idea of birth itself as a calamity.
Yeah, the big one.
Cioran's central thesis is just radical.
Yeah.
Human existence isn't just difficult, it's fundamentally problematic, rooted in the very act of being born into consciousness.
It's a heavy starting point.
He calls it a cosmic accident, a fall from what he terms the blissful void of non-existence into this painful realm of awareness, desire, and inevitably death. It's a complete flip of how most cultures, most people celebrate new life.
A total inversion.
So what's he truly rejecting about existence when he calls birth a calamity? Is it just the pain, or is it something deeper about consciousness itself?
Oh, it's absolutely about consciousness. For Cioran, that blissful void isn't just like nothingness.
Okay.
It's a state free from the agony of self-awareness, a state where there's no perception of meaninglessness because, well, there's no perception at all.
So consciousness is the double-edged sword.
Exactly. Humanity's greatest achievement and its most profound curse. It's what traps us in the awareness of our own fleeting existence, our desires, our suffering.
And the knowledge of death.
And the inescapable knowledge of death, yeah.
Yeah.
He basically inverts millennia of thought that celebrates birth as this amazing gift.
And instead sees it as...
as an unwanted imposition.
Mm.
A violent ejection from peace, really.
It's unflinching, almost brutal, that examination.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, for someone just trying to live their life, you know, find some purpose, Shorin's view sounds like an endless loop of despair.
It can sound that way initially, yeah.
So why does he think we persist, if life is such a fundamental problem?
Well, that's the paradox he's grappling with. And he's not offering traditional answers or easy solutions.
No quick fixes here?
Definitely not. His work isn't really about finding a reason to persist, but more an unflinching examination of existence itself.
Just looking it straight in the eye.
Exactly. It questions if life is truly worth living, especially for those who've already felt that weight of consciousness, you know, for whom the usual consolations just feel hollow.
Right. They don't ring true anymore.
Yeah. He writes for those willing to confront uncomfortable truths without needing the promise of a happy ending or an easy way out.
Okay, let's dive a bit deeper then into some of the mechanisms of this torment he talks about.
Sure.
He sees self-awareness, our consciousness, as practically a disease, the primary instrument of torture.
Strong words.
Very. He explores how our ability to think about thinking creates this endless loop of suffering. You're not just feeling pain.
It's like a meta-pain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Soren argues consciousness doesn't just present us with pain. It subjects us to this meta-awareness of the pain, an inescapable internal commentary that just keeps multiplying the suffering.
He takes this idea to its absolute limit. He actually expresses this profound envy for inanimate objects.
Like a stone or a flower.
Yeah, exactly. A stone, a flower, a cloud. They simply are. They exist without the burden of knowing they exist.
Without the self-reflection torment.
Precisely. It's a powerful analogy for our predicament. We're trapped by this unique, often agonizing faculty of self-awareness. To Soren, their ignorant existence is frankly enviable.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? I mean, have you ever just wished you could be? Without all the overthinking, the constant self-analysis, the worry.
Oh, definitely. We all have those moments.
Soren takes that feeling, that common feeling, and pushes it to its logical absolute extreme, arguing that the default state, non-being, was actually the blissful one.
And to cope with this existential predicament, Soren argues humans survive through what he calls necessary self-deceptions.
Okay, what does he mean by that?
These are the illusions we cling to. Our belief in progress, our tireless search for meaning, for purpose, for future happiness.
The things that keep us going.
Yeah, but he says they're simultaneously vital for our psychological survival, yet fundamentally false.
Wow. Like scaffolding around an empty core.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
That's a truly radical idea. I mean, most people would argue hope, for instance, is a virtue. It drives us forward, right?
Right, the conventional view.
But you're saying Soren sees hope as a trap.
Absolutely. For Soren, hope, far from being a virtue, actually perpetuates suffering.
Also.
It keeps us clinging to this illusion of improvement or future happiness, which prevents us from truly accepting our fundamental difficult condition.
So it stops us facing reality.
In his view, yes. It's a cruel game our minds play, forever tethering us to a cycle of desire and potential disappointment. Most human activity, he claims, is just an elaborate, frantic attempt to avoid confronting the stark reality of existence.
Building complex systems of meaning.
Exactly. Systems that, under honest, unflinching examination, inevitably collapse. The bigger implication is maybe our entire civilization is just this grand collective illusion.
Designed to distract us from the void.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, and this leads us to Cioran's probably most famous and definitely most counterintuitive idea, the one that often raises eyebrows.
The suicide paradox.
Right. He's not advocating for suicide.
No, absolutely not. Crucial distinction.
But exploring the idea of suicide as a tool for survival,
yeah.
That's subtle. But utterly crucial, especially given how heavy the topic is.
It is. For Cioran, the sheer knowledge that one can end one's life at any moment, that's the only thing that makes existence bearable for him.
How does that work?
It transforms life from what feels like a forced prison sentence into a voluntary stay. Ah, Because you choose to stay each day.
Exactly. It gives you this ultimate sense of freedom and control over your fate, even if you never, ever act on it.
Yeah.
It's a lifeline, but it's woven not from the act itself, but from the thought of its availability.
The ultimate psychological safety net.
You could call it that, yeah.
He has that notable quote, right? Something like, I live only because it is in my power to die when I choose to.
Without the idea of suicide, I'd have killed myself long ago. That's the one.
So how does this profound and, yeah, admittedly dark freedom actually allow someone to endure life's burdens?
Well, it means that this freedom, this ultimate emergency exit, paradoxically allows one to truly live, or at least endure.
Yeah.
The constant awareness of this choice grants you a kind of psychological leverage over life's pressures. The present moment, however difficult, becomes more tolerable because you know you always hold that final escape clause.
So it's about control, self-possession. Exactly. Control and self-possession in the face of despair. Not necessarily about the act itself. It's embracing absolute liberty even when facing absolute meaninglessness.
Okay. Wow. This all sounds incredibly bleak, as we've said. But as we hinted at earlier, Xiorin, in his own dark way, seems to offer some surprisingly applicable insights, things that can actually help you, the listener.
Yeah, it's not just about wallowing.
Right. It's not about being depressed. It's maybe about seeing things clearly, which can lead to a peculiar kind of liberation.
Precisely. First off, Xiorin's work can be a radical antidote to our society's relentless obsession with success, productivity, making your mark.
Your constant pressure.
Exactly. By internalizing his view, even a little, on the fundamental futility of all action in the grand cosmic sense, you might feel liberated from that immense anxiety, the pressure to make something of yourself.
So failure becomes less terrifying.
Yeah. A career setback, a failed project, an unmet ambition suddenly loses its catastrophic weight. For Xiorin, these are just minor ripples in an indifferent cosmos. And that perspective can be profoundly freeing.
And what about for people who often feel that existential dread or anxiety, feelings of alienation? Which, let's be honest, many of us do at times.
Right. Xiorin can be strangely comforting for them. He doesn't offer platitudes or easy answers.
No. Look on the bright side.
Definitely not. Instead, he validates those feelings. He makes personal suffering feel less like a personal failing.
And more like?
More like an intelligent, honest response to reality itself. You're not broken for feeling this way. Maybe you're just aware.
That makes sense.
Furthermore, Xiorin really cultivates a healthy, robust skepticism towards all grand claims, all ideologies.
Question everything.
Pretty much. He trains your mind to question promises of utopia, easy solutions, any system claiming to have all the answers. And if we connect this to the bigger picture,
yeah,
this intellectual humility, this critical thinking, it can actually protect you from fanaticism,
yeah,
in all its forms, political, social, philosophical.
Because no single system can really fix the human condition.
That's his underlying point, yeah.
No.
It reveals their limitations.
And here's maybe the ultimate paradox we touched on. By confronting and accepting, the worst case scenario that existence is, at its core, maybe a pointless ordeal.
Which is a tough pill to swallow.
Absolutely. But by doing that, you're paradoxically freed from the fear of it.
Mm.
Once you've looked directly into the abyss, really acknowledged its nature, the smaller anxieties, the daily disappointments, they tend to lose their power.
There's a strange piece in that.
That's what he suggests. A piece that comes from abandoning false hopes. Because you're no longer vulnerable to being let down, it's the peace of knowing there's nothing worse to fear, perhaps.
And finally, maybe counterintuitively, by stripping away that insistent societal need for life to have some grand overarching meaning or purpose.
Which is everywhere.
It is. Xiorin inadvertently opens up this profound space to just appreciate small, fleeting moments.
Like what?
Oh, you know, beauty or peace. A piece of music hitting you just right, a walk in nature, a quiet moment of just being, the warmth of a coffee cup.
Simple things.
Simple things. They can be enjoyed purely for what they are, without the pressure of fitting them into some larger, supposedly meaningful narrative.
They don't need justification.
Exactly. They become simple, innocent joys, appreciated precisely because they're brief, and don't need some ultimate justification.
So wrapping up this deep dive,
uh-huh,
we've explored Xiorin's enlightened pessimism, you could call it.
Yeah, I like that term for it.
A philosophy that, while unflinching, often stark, isn't really meant to just foster despair.
No, the goal isn't depression.
Right. Instead, it aims for a profound, maybe brutally honest, clarity. By accepting existence's fundamental difficulties, our precarious place, he suggests we can find a peculiar form of peace.
A peace that doesn't rely on those false hopes or comforting illusions we talked about?
It's definitely a challenging path, but maybe for some it feels like the only honest one.
I think the lasting insight, for me anyway, is that maybe the deepest truths aren't always found in affirmation, in saying yes to everything.
But in negation.
Perhaps. Or at least not in desperately seeking meaning, but in unflinchingly confronting meaninglessness. It suggests that sometimes the most liberating act is simply to acknowledge the inherent trouble.
Which raises, well, an important final question for you, the listener.
Indeed.
If Sue Rann is right, even partly right, and the real trouble is being born into consciousness, what fundamental assumptions about your own life, about the future, about perfect, maybe even about bringing new life into the world, might you now be willing to honestly question?
Mm-hmm. What kind of peace are you truly seeking, maybe, in what Sue Rann saw as an indifferent universe?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.